A young chaplain walked into the room at St. Luke's Hospital in San Francisco, and the first greeting that she received was the stench. If you've ever smelled death before, it is something that you never forget. Taking in short and shallow breaths, the chaplain looked for her patient. She wasn't even assigned to this part of the unit, but there was something in that conversation over bingo that brought her to this room to see this patient. The bickering family on the left wasn't his. The cartoons blaring on the TV on the right, that wasn't his either. He was over in the corner, his legs wrapped in stale gauze, terrified of what was to come. His name was Paul, and he was 44 years old and suffering from end-stage AIDS. He had Kaposi's sarcoma on his legs, cancerous lesions that killed and rotted his skin, resulting in painful, wasting sores. It was the pain and the fear of this pain that made for the misery that Paul endured. And because of this pain, and because of this fear, Paul fought the nurses from changing the dressings at every single one of the hospitals that he had been in throughout the city. In fact, at this point, St. Luke's was the only hospital that would admit him, and that may have been by mistake. So it was with some trepidation that this young chaplain entered the room that day, not quite sure of what would be asked of her. To her surprise, Paul had only one request for the chaplain, a simple one: that she would sit with him so that he wouldn't be alone when the nurses came to change the dressings on his open wounds. And that is when the stench of death filled the room. The power of scent. Researchers have found that scent is one of the most powerful tools the human brain uses to store information. It is so effective that when researchers offered scents to patients suffering from severe dementia, memories of long ago immediately, almost miraculously, unlocked. The scent of a cake baking, or of fresh laundry, or of beeswax candles, or of orange blossoms, or of ocean breezes. Often these scents serve as triggers that can restore experiences and emotions that otherwise lay dormant within the synapses of our brains. There is no doubt in my mind that the writer of John's Gospel knew the power of scent. It is why this passage begins with the foretelling of Mary of Bethany's anointing of Jesus' feet. Now, bear in mind that Mary's act of complete attention and devotion will not take place until the next chapter in John's Gospel. But already at this point, the writer wants us to have that in mind. The fragrance of sweet perfume filling every room in the house. It is also why our passage this morning is so evocative near the end. After finally getting to Bethany, initially and purposefully staying away, after consoling Martha and then Mary, after coming to grips with his own grief, Jesus finally comes to Lazarus' tomb. Now, the writer of the gospel gives us other clues so that we can know what has happened. We've already been told that Lazarus has been entombed for 4 days. And remember that the belief at this time was that after 3 days, a person's spirit finally departs the body. After 3 days, there is no possibility of resuscitation.
Indeed, already in our story, we know that Lazarus is dead. And yet, as Jesus approaches the tomb, Martha is compelled to declare in a final moment of, is it despair? Is it dread? Lord, there already is a stench because he has been dead 4 days. The stench of death, the stench of death. The scent of perfume still in the air, Jesus walks into the stench of death. Does he not already know that Lazarus is dead? Do we really need more proof? Do we need to be assaulted with that smell, that stench that fills your nostrils, nearly choking you with its force? There are few senses more visceral than this stench. It is a smell that is primal and at the core of our human existence. It is a smell of loss, of destruction, of end. Is it any wonder that Martha would fear taking away that stone, knowing what lay behind it? The first time that the chaplain sat next to Paul as his dressings were changed, she nearly passed out. The stench of rotting flesh, the sight of his skin decomposing, was almost too much. And yet she remained. In the midst of the palpable sense of death, she remained as Paul's legs were slowly, painfully unbound, cleaned, and redressed. Is it any wonder what Paul feared, this pain and suffering, these clear reminders of what his time on earth had become? As soon as the nurse finished cleaning and rebandaging Paul's legs, he whispered to the chaplain, "Quick, please get the little bottle out of the top drawer." The chaplain rummaged through the multitude of nearly spent cans of lemon-lime soda, and finally, in the back of the drawer of the nightstand, she pulled out a small plastic bottle that read, "Blessed Anointing Oil, Pentecostal Gathering, 2004. Unsure of quite what to do, she asked, "Do you want me to anoint you with this oil?" "Open it up and put some oil on my hands," he said. She opened up the bottle, poured some onto his hands, which he then rubbed into his legs. He then turned to her, pulled the hat off of his now bald head, and said, "Now anoint me and bless me." Both Paul and Martha shared a rock-solid belief in the resurrection of the life to come. Just as Martha was able to proclaim, "I know that he," meaning Lazarus, "will rise again in the resurrection on the last day," Paul too had a firm belief in Jesus' resurrection at the end of days. But for Martha and Paul, and I have to believe many of us here this morning, our own physical death is not our only fear. For just as powerful is our fear of living in the midst of the deaths that occur in our day-to-day lives. Not just the physical deaths, though they make us ache, but also the death of lost vitality. The death of a close relationship that once gave life but does no longer. The death of a career that will never be what it was promised to be. The death of long-cherished independence. Friends, so many of us are bound, trapped by the fears of these deaths, unable to move. Unable to know that this resurrection, this glorious impossible, is not simply about being raised when our mortal body lies in death, but it is about the resurrection and the life here and now as well. It is about letting loose the strips of cloth that keep us bound in fear, breaking the shackles of friend and stranger so that we may live, even in the midst of struggle and pain. This, my friends, is what the resurrection and the life are all about. The chaplain poured into her palm more of the oil that Paul had stashed in his nightstand, and rubbing some onto her thumb, she placed her hand on Paul's forehead, making the sign of the cross, and she prayed. She prayed for God's presence. She prayed for wholeness. She prayed for the knowledge of God's love. She prayed for compassion and skill for all those who would continue to care for Paul. She prayed for solace and strength in the midst of pain. And in that moment, released from the oil, came the scent of the balm of Gilead. The fragrance moved through the stale air of the room, mingling with the stench that had remained, transforming that space from that time forward. Jesus walked towards the stone that had sealed Lazarus' tomb. This was to be his seventh and final sign of life in John's gospel. The stone was removed. Jesus prayed to God, not just to hear him, but so that all would know that God was present. He cried with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" The dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth, his face wrapped in a cloth. Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go."